White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
So welcome into White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and we've got you for the next 2 hours here on WLS AM. Here's what we've got planned. A lot of news for the White Sox over the last 12 hours or so. We're going to get into the injury to Carlos Rodon and the fact that it will sideline him for the rest of the year. We'll get you the latest from White Sox manager Ricky Renteria and find out how the Sox are going to fill that spot in the rotation. We will hear from one of the men who has stepped up into the White Sox rotation, Lucas Giolito. He pitched last night, might have gotten squeezed a bit, fought through a couple of things. I had a sit-down with Lucas before last night's start. You'll hear from him there. We will also chat with one of the White Sox top prospects, Michael Kopech. That's a little later on in the show, too. All that, plus we're going to talk with Scott Merkin of MLB.com and get the latest on the club from his perspective, a guy who covers it every day. So we have a whole lot to do here on our, I think it's our third to last White Sox Weekly during the regular season. A Saturday afternoon game, I suppose Saturday evening game against the San Francisco Giants coming up. James Shields and Jeff Samardzija are our starters tonight. Our pregame show is going to start in exactly 2 hours. 5:35, we'll get that revved up and rolling. Ed and DJ will have the first pitch at 6:10. Between old, former, familiar foe, Jeff Samardzija, former White Sox, of course, and then James Shields is going to get the ball here, too. And just if I can, I'm pretty surprised James is going to make this start. First and foremost, the sound that the comebacker off of his knee made in his last start, it ended his afternoon. The sound was horrifying, and I really thought it got him a lot worse than it did. Luckily, the knee was flexed, and it sounds like an inch or two the other way, and perhaps he wasn't going to make that next start. He's a much tougher guy than I am, for sure, and is going to be making his start tonight. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, and we'll do this too because I think it's going to be a topic of conversation all throughout the show, Carlos Rodon is done for the season. The White Sox noticed, Carlos noticed some stiffness in his left shoulder leading into his last start while he was playing catch. They scratched him. Mike Pelfrey stepped up and into the rotation, or into that night's start, I should say. Had to wear it a little bit, but by and large, when you've got 5-6 minutes to prepare for a start against one of the best teams in baseball, the Cleveland Indians, as Mike Pelfrey did, it's hard to imagine things going much better. Pelfrey was able to throw about 80 pitches, get 4 innings, and really save a lot of the bullpen. Sure, it wasn't glamorous or anything, but sometimes in a season, you've got to ask guys to do that job. So the news is that Carlos is done for the year, and we'll hear from Carlos. He spoke last night to White Sox beat reporters in the clubhouse, and I want to play that for you, and you'll hear from Carlos about where his shoulder's at. But for the year, 12 starts for Carlos Rodon. He threw 69 and a third innings in total. Had a couple of weird starts, some where he was hit up a little bit, some where the strikeouts were massive, some where both happened. You'll remember that 4-inning start against the Cubs, where he, of the 12 outs he recorded, 11 were by strikeout. He gave up 12 home runs. Home runs are up across the league. 31 walks in about 70 innings. His strikeouts, though, were 76, and at times he looked completely dominant. At times he looked like he was trying to fight and find the slider some, and at times he looked like he was trying to find everything. So I think in those 12 starts from Carlos, you saw a little bit of everything. And given the way the season began for Carlos Rodon, given that it was such a prolonged, protracted stay on the disabled list to start the year for him with the bursitis in his throwing arm as well, given the fact that he didn't get on the mound until June 28th, that was a start against the Yankees where he went 5 innings, did not allow an earned run, walked 6 and struck out 2. That's that kind of up and down, back and forth afternoon that Carlos, working some of the rust off, kind of gave the White Sox over the first couple. But for what you saw, I don't know that it's necessary. This is the question that's been asked a lot, and it's been posed to Ricky too, Ricky Renteria, White Sox manager. Is it a lost season for Carlos? Is this a season of, you know, where setbacks are going to overshadow the progress that might have gotten made on the mound. And I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case, but it is unfortunate. There's no doubt about it, and it's got to be somewhat disappointing for Carlos, and I think you'll hear it too when we play the audio from last night. It is disappointing that he was only able to make 12 starts. There's no doubt about it. He didn't register 70 innings. And if you talk to any starter around the league, that is, that in and of itself, not being able to take the ball every 5 days, is going to be something that disappoints. However, I think some lessons were able to be learned. And I think for Carlos, you know, in as much as he's got to get healthy first, perhaps if this offseason can be about finding out what it is that's going to keep him healthiest, if this offseason can be about making sure that, you know, 2018, this next year, is a consistent one for him, then you have to take those little silver linings and run with them the best you can. Otherwise, this can become a lost season, if you catch the meaning. It's only lost if, I suppose, if Carlos puts it away, and I don't think he's the kind of guy that will. It sounds like, you know, after getting over this and getting over, and I mean the health issues here, getting healthy, sounds like he's going to be ready to get back and at it. He knows how big a part of the White Sox future he is. I think Ricky Renteria knows it. I believe the front office has mentioned it a time or two, and I think, you know, you can see it every time he goes out there with the stuff he's able to flash and to dominate with over the course of starts. So let's take a second here real quickly. This was Carlos Rodon last night in the clubhouse after the White Sox fell to the Giants in the first game of three. 9-2 was the final score last night, but Carlos took a minute to talk to reporters after they'd come into the clubhouse after the loss. Here is Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, that MRI was kind of the same as the last one I took. The previous one I took, I can't remember when it was, at the end of the spring training. So and then just move on and try to get healthy.
Did it stay there, do they think? I mean, even though you pitch, you know, you pitch well and pitch through it, or is it just something that reoccurred
for him? I can't tell you. I guess it just spurred up. I mean, things happen. I don't have an answer for you.
Is it a concern that it's serious, or is it something that you think that can get through again and start strong next year?
We'll see. Just still evaluating and, you know, I'll definitely be back to pitch next year. No doubt about that. But, like I said, just trying to get healthy and figure out the problem.
Obviously, this year hadn't gone how you wanted it to go. What kind of positives can you take from when you were out there?
I had some good starts. Had a good run. It would have been nice to keep going. But, you know, like I said, these things happen and you just got to get better.
Do you feel like there's something you have to maybe change in the off season, or is that something you worry about after you get all the treatment through? And
yeah, something I'll figure out later. Right now, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it.
Are you okay? I mean, obviously, you don't want to be out for the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Did you agree, okay, yeah, I think this is the best decision?
Yeah, for the future of the team and the future, you know, my future, I think, yeah. I think it's the best thing, best way to go about it. I mean, it's tough news to take, but I mean, there's not much I can do about it.
Yeah, that's Carlos Rodon, and those long-term decisions or those type of long-term decisions can't be easy for a player. I mean, you've seen guys, I don't know why, but Matt Harvey just kind of popped to mind, and this is, you know, Matt Harvey looking to get back on the mound after his Tommy John, and he just wanted to pitch 3 or 4 times at the end of the month for the Mets just to know that he could. Not necessarily saying that, you know, that's an analogous situation. It's certainly a different injury, a different ball player, and heck, it's a different joint. But for as far as understanding the mindset of how tough a long-term decision is to make like this, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, you'd want to get out there and have some kind of confidence at some point. So to be on the same page, to get to that same point where the organization, player, coaches, training staff, everybody's ready to make this same call. It's not easy, but it seems to be the best long-term decision to make. You heard Carlos, too, talk about the run he got on. He certainly was on one. This is from July 30th to August 21st, a span of 5 different starts for Carlos. He faced the Indians, Red Sox, Astros, Dodgers, and Twins in that order. Went 36 innings over those 5 starts. He allowed 9 earned runs, so that's an ERA of 2.25. He allowed only 4 home runs over those 5 starts. He walked only 9 hitters over those 36 innings, and he struck out 37. So there was a run in there where Carlos seemed to get real comfortable and settle right back into or right into the guy you'd want to see, the guy that you kind of thought was in there for the next step this season. And I was telling everybody I could to go grab Carlos in a fantasy draft, you know, to go look at Carlos as a guy who's going to make that next step. And I, you know, don't mean to make light of the situation, but given everything that, you know, I'd talked with Carlos about and talked with the coach, everything heading into this year, it seemed as though this was going to be a real nice breakout type season for Carlos. And it's unfortunate that injuries have set him back. But I think, you know, in this season, as I mentioned, there are positives to take from it and lessons to be learned. And assuming that he comes around healthy over this winter and is able to hit spring training with, you know, whatever kind of plan the White Sox put out there for him, I think there is pretty obviously some talent and some ability that's going to be a part of the White Sox future in their rotation. Sox fans, you can join us as the White Sox take on the Kansas City Royals on Saturday, September 23rd at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans will receive an Orgullo, I think, two L's, I think it's the Y, Orgullo Sox soccer-style jersey in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month presented by Coca-Cola. And my apologies to those who speak the language better than I do. I apologize for screwing up the word. To purchase specially priced tickets, visit whitesox.com/Orgullo. That's Orgullo. When we come back, we will hear from Ricky Renteria. He just got done speaking with reporters today. There is some news in it as far as the latest on Carlos Rodon and how the White Sox will kind of merit out those starts or meet out the rest of the starts for the next 3 weeks of the season. So keep it right here. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. If you've ever dreamed of being a White Sox player, well, now is your chance. You can attend the 2018 Chicago White Sox Fantasy Camp at Camelback Ranch, Glendale, January 14th through the 20th, and you will be treated like a pro. For more information or to reserve your roster spot, call 623-302-5078. I'll give it to you again, 623-302-5078, or you can head to the internet and sign up at whitesox.com. That's an easy website to remember. You're probably there a lot, whitesox.com. We mentioned that there was some news cracking around for Ricky Renteria's pregame press conference today. Want to make sure you're up to date and that we're up to date here on the show since we started while Ricky was, we were on the air when Ricky was talking to reporters. So without much further ado, Ricky began, I believe, talking a bit about the decision to shut Carlos down for the rest of the season and exactly how things are going to play out in the rotation from here on out. You'll remember the White Sox have added a couple of arms here. Chris Volstad is up. Mike Pelfrey made that start when Rodon was scratched. Carson Fulmer is going to make a start tomorrow. David Holmberg has had a start. So there are a bunch of arms that weren't necessarily in the rotation, per se, that could go into the rotation. The White Sox do only have one off day through the rest of the season. That's Monday the 18th, so not 2 days from now, but the next Monday. And I mention that because not only is that it's a tough schedule to grind out for the rest of the year, but, you know, injury-wise, thank goodness you've got expanded rosters here too. But it's not as though you can be, if you had perhaps three off days in a month, as is a little bit more usual, it's not as though you can be totally and completely creative with a rotation if you had an extra three guys. So Renteria sits down with reporters today, and I believe things began talking a bit about the injury to Carlos Rodon.
We didn't really ask you yesterday, with Carlos going down, what do you anticipate stepping in and filling some of that role?
Well, it could be, we go back to Fulmer and Kobe and Palfrey possibly. So those are our three guys that we have in our mind right now as to who might possibly fill that role.
Could you rotate those three into the two spots,
We could. I mean, it just depends on how we use them during the week, during a series, and then obviously how much we can get them extended.
Holmberg? I'm sorry. Is Holmberg in that mix too, you think?
Yeah, Holmberg could be, yeah.
Is it tough though when you have someone like Carson that you've started for the and is it difficult for him to do all that transition?
You know what? I think right now at this point it's probably more about the work that he's going to be getting in. Dealing with the different scenarios that he would be put in actually might benefit him, because a little bit of adversity, a little tweak here or there might put him in a better place to be able to handle many more things. So I don't think he's thinking about it in those terms. I think he's more likely to think about just being thankful to get the ball, and whether it's starting or relieving, and being here and trying to continue to get better as he's pitching.
It's just one of those things you're talking about a lot lately, because the youth and everything is the adversity, and all, everyone has to get over it. So, like, when you look at towards next year, they've had all these experiences.
Yes. It's helpful for them because it kind of, it's like, I guess it's like a novelist or a writer. The best ones are always speaking most times of through life experience. And the athletes, I think, are no different. And none of us are any different. I think we are much better off after we've lived certain things in our lives, and we've dealt with adversity and or experienced both joy and pain to become better people and better, in our instance, better athletes, better baseball players.
James Shields maybe hasn't, he was saying he hasn't done what he's wanted to. He's come over here.
Yeah.
This year kind of battled the lat injury. Mm-hmm. Is there an ace still in that arm?
Is there an ace still on that arm? I think he's revented himself to the point where he's given us, I think, four or five of his last starts have been quality starts. So he's been able to at least put himself in a position where he's kept us in ball games. I know he's, since coming over, he's wanted to do like anywhere he's been. He's wanted to do well. I think that by making the adjustments as he has made, he's made himself again a major league pitcher that gives their club an opportunity, by contending the opponents to a particular number of runs, a chance to win a ball game. And you know, he goes out there and gives you everything he's got. He wears it on his sleeve. He gives you all his heart and you know, soul when he's competing. And you know, I don't expect that will change. I think that he will continue to go out there and do the best that he can to give us a chance to win ball games.
When you've got a rotation that projects next year, younger, do you need a guy like that in there to kind of anchor things?
Well, listen, he's a young man. Well, not as young, but he's a veteran who's been around. Who we don't see him going anywhere in the near future. I mean, he's going to be a part of who we are. Unless our plans change, but right now he's a part of the mix.
What do you like about Adam Engel that you write him in the lineup every day?
Well, Adam can save you quite a few runs, as everybody has noticed. He can run balls down that most other guys can't. He's obviously a tremendously gifted center fielder. The other aspect is we're hoping, as he continues to work through his offensive situation in terms of trying to develop a cleaner swing path, continuing to have at-bats, putting himself in a position where he's going to continue to learn, even through failure, if he's going to be able to improve or not. And that experience, I think, is invaluable for him. I think if you can get a guy that can run balls down like he can, and you can get him on a pace to be able to defend himself at the plate, we might have a little something special there.
Is the swing path, does that help him become a better contact guy? Because the guy can run, so it really is just a case of making more. It seems like a case
I think he's just trying to get comfortable with who he is as a hitter. Obviously, a part of his game should still be bunting because of his speed, but he's still been working through some different sets, and it's, again, a work in progress. Hopefully it continues to evolve to something positive, and he's able to contribute on both ends of the baseball.
Rick, how challenging is it right now with players and families in the path of the hurricane, not going to have communication for days, and trying to keep their emotions in check and still play a baseball game?
Well, I think, you know, it's obviously difficult because they're human beings, and I'm sure that their families are on their mind. like most professionals, I think you have to compartmentalize as best you possibly can. Again, this is another experience that they're having right now while being in the big leagues, where they're having, you know, to be happy about being in a place that very few get to. They also understand their family members are in harm's way, and so you've got to be able to kind of come to grips with both. The reality is, when they get on the hill, I'm sure that they're focused on doing what they got to do, and once they come off the field, they focus on what's the most important, which is their families. And so it's tough. I'm sure you know, everybody deals with it differently. Hopefully our guys are able to deal with it as well as they possibly can, and still, you know, do both things.
Do you have to address it all, particularly with certain players that may be a little more emotional?
I, you know what, I think that what we try to do is, they're all individuals, we kind of touch them a little bit. We talk to them. I know as the last one was going through, we talked to a few guys, and just kind of keep in touch that way. They're very aware of what's going on, but I think it's going to be what it's going to be. It kind of takes care of itself, and so there are very few things you can control in this particular instance for them.
How do you handle a guy like Mike Conner, a young player after a game like that? I mean, do you have to tell him anything, encouragement, a reminder about things that need to be done, or do you say anything at all?
No, I think in particular yesterday's game, I think we addressed in the moments after every play yesterday what was going on. So you try to, if you can, you try to get it as quickly as you can. Again, timing is really important, because the young man's getting ready to hit. I don't want him to start thinking about what just happened out there in the field. I need him to get ready to hit. But our coaching staff is really, really good at picking the moments and when they're talking to the players after certain situations. You have to address them. It's be foolish not to. I think it has more to do, though, with how they approach the particular ground ball or a fly ball or things of that nature. And when it comes to the at-bats, you know, Trey Gann or Sparky talk to them about what might have been going on in their minds in a particular situation. It's just part of the process, and I don't think it changes whether you're a rookie or a veteran.
The same thing with Lucas, what he went through.
Yeah.
Because he has all this time off before he starts again.
Yeah.
Would you talk to him? Is Doc talking to him about his emotions and trying to handle him?
No, I mean, I had plenty of time to talk to him last night after the game. And so we were in there giving each other solace, so to speak. No, listen, we spoke about what happened in that particular situation, and the reality is it's over. I think he was more upset at himself, because he thought he was getting himself into deeper counts yesterday a little bit, and so I explained to him that, you know, it's kind of a two-pronged effect. You know, we there were certain plays we probably could have made that we didn't make, and he's trying to work through that, and maybe if we make a couple of plays, it allows him a few more pitches to continue to work. But he was like, you know, I didn't throw enough strikes. I thought I was putting myself in a deeper count. So he took it upon himself and accountable to his actions, which is kind of refreshing, to be honest.
That's White Sox manager Ricky Renteria from just a couple of minutes ago. So the rotation will basically be filled out with a number of guys, it sounds like, whether that be Carson Fulmer, Mike Pelfrey, Dylan Covey. You know the names. They've made starts before this season. Carson Fulmer will get the start tomorrow against these San Francisco Giants. Also, quite something to hear about players who have family in Florida, in any of the islands around that area too, Cuba, the Dominican. Boy, that hurricane is serious business, and I know a lot of players' thoughts are obviously with family and family members who may be in there. For one, Jose Abreu said his family in Cuba is safe after getting some good effects of the Hurricane Irma that's coming through. His wife and mother are staying in Miami, however. So obviously our best wishes go out to those in hurricane-affected areas. You heard Ricky, too, talk about a conversation he had with Lucas Giolito after both of them were removed from the game yesterday by home plate umpire Gabe Morales. We'll hear from Lucas Giolito when we come back after the 4 o'clock news. I had a chance to sit down with a young, burgeoning White Sox pitcher, and we'll hear from him in just a few. You've got White Sox Weekly, so stay right here, WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Giants coming up at 6:10 tonight. We'll start the pregame show at 5:35. It'll be James Shields and Jeff Samardzija on the mound. Well, you got the White Sox lineup. Probably give that to you a little bit later on in the show. We will also, later on in the show, be, I'll explain it too, we'll be giving away tickets to a sit-down, an exclusive hello, and an interview with White Sox general manager Rick Hahn. That'll be on September 20th. We've got a chance for you to win some tickets. You can stop by the WLS studios. We got a real nice setup in there. We got a cafeteria, little sound lounge, the whole thing. Theater. You can sit down, and we're going to do a one-on-one. Rick Hahn and I, we're going to talk a lot about this White Sox organization, the rebuild, the young players, the whole thing. It's going to be a blast and really kind of a got-to-go-to for White Sox fans. So you have a chance to win some tickets to that sit-down. The hot seat with Hahn is what we're calling it, because we got to have alliteration in our contests. And we're going to give those away a little bit later on this afternoon, probably about the 4:45 mark or so. We're going to talk to Lucas Giolito in just a second, but I got to tell you first that you can head to the park for Dollar Hot Dogs one last time this season. Take advantage of this unbeatable deal on the last Wednesday home game as the Sox take on the Los Angeles Angels at 7:10 p.m. You can purchase tickets today by visiting WhiteSox.com or by calling 866-SOX-GAME. Sit down with White Sox rookie Lucas Giolito. Lucas, a couple of starts here over the last few weeks. Things have gone by and large pretty well for you. Let's talk a bit about this season in Charlotte heading up to, you know, your promotion here. I know the start of the year was maybe a little bit different than the second half of the season. Talked with your pitching coach Steve McCaddy at one point, and he mentioned that, you know, you could all kind of feel that you were coming around close. What did being close mean, and what was the switch that flipped?
Yeah, it was start off the year. I was struggling with a few things, you know, struggling to repeat my delivery, struggling mentally with confidence, and just trusting my stuff. Over the course of the season, it did feel like it was getting closer and closer, and that that closeness was like getting closer to just getting back to myself, and that is being very, very confident out on the mound, trusting what I have that day, and just competing to the best of my ability. And so I was able to start doing that more towards the second half of the year, and yeah, it's worked out well. Now I'm up here.
Is it possible that that's a lesson you take with you? I mean, in your first start, I think, for the Sox, for the White Sox at the big league level, you mentioned your curveball wasn't exactly where it was, and you had to move on to some different things. Is that a lesson maybe learned this season?
Yeah, just I used to get frustrated. I'd go out there, and I'd feel like my mechanics weren't right on the mound, and it would just, from, you know, first pitch, just have, like, that level of frustration in the back of my head, like, it's not coming out right. You know, I'm not feeling good, and I would let it affect my performance, whereas now it's like you have what you have.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're warming up in the pen that day, you go out there on the mound, and, you know, maybe something's not working or something's really working. It's being able to kind of utilize that to the best of your ability that day. And that's kind of a big lesson I've learned, is that, you know, as a pitcher, you have to go out there every 5 days with what you got, and you just work to the best of your ability.
So when this airs, you'll have pitched Friday against the Giants. Ronaldo Lopez went the other night. What is it like when you're not pitching, when you get to watch a guy like Carlos, a guy like Ronaldo, guys that you've been teammates with and worked with some? You know, Ricky Renteria has talked a bit about the excitement that kind of is around you young guys in that rotation. Do you feel that when Ronaldo goes out and doesn't quite have the defense behind him but still pitches really well to get around it? Do you feel that hype?
Yeah, definitely. I you know, I've been playing with Lopi for 4 or 5 years now, so, you know, we're pretty close. So, you know, I get a little nervous watching some of my close friends out there on the mound. Sometimes a lot more nervous than I am when I'm out there. But no, I mean, Lopi's an awesome dude, and he's a really, really good pitcher. I've actually learned a lot from him over the years, just because I think that he has a pitcher's mind kind of beyond his years. He's very, very good at reading swings, you know, sequencing pitches. So those are a bunch of things I've learned from him specifically. But yeah, overall, I mean, just, you know, the young talent in general, the starting rotation, as well as, you know, some other guys that will be coming up soon over the next couple of years. It's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, it's cool to have that kind of that young core where we're developing and working together.
Often it's, you know, we talk about young guys learning from veterans like James Shields, and that's important, no doubt about it. But I find it interesting that, you know, with the way the White Sox have set up some of the young talent, there are going to be, it seems like, waves. And there's got to be things that you can learn from your peers as well. And I wonder if there's, if you've spotted a difference in, like, the lessons that maybe you learn, or how you acquire those little things along the way from guys like veterans as opposed to your peers, guys you're at the same level with.
Yeah, I mean, with veteran guys, you know, guys like James, who I talk to all the time, you know, you can go to him and ask him questions just about whatever, pitching, life, whatever, just from their experience. You know, he's been doing it for a very, very long time. He's figured it out. So, you know, I'll go to him with questions about pitching, or, you know, he'll come over and tell me, you know, a certain thought he has about something I'm doing. Whereas with the younger guys, we kind of learn from each other just from watching each other, being around each other, you know, pointing things out. That's not really something that comes from experience, but just from, you know, kind of growing with each other and being around each other.
It's working with Coop like?
Awesome. Awesome. I really like just in the in our sidelines and watching video. We point out a lot of the positives. You know, we try to keep things as positive as possible. You know, when I do throw a good pitch, he makes sure to tell me, you know, remember, like, that feeling you have.
Yeah.
You know, when you release that curveball out there and you throw it perfectly, you know, what is that you're feeling? You know, it's a lot of good positive reinforcement. But at the same time, he's honest. You know, he'll tell you, you know, I think that this pitch will be a weapon for you. I think that, you know, this might not be so good for you. And in the case for my slider this year, that was kind of started in spring training, you know, he told me, I can see you being a guy, if you add this pitch into your arsenal, it'll be very effective. And, you know, sure enough, I've been working on it over the whole year, and now it's at a point where it's a true weapon for me out there.
How much do you think about pitch mix and the idea that can kind of change and evolve? Like, you could scrap one at one point. I mean, you're still so young in this whole scheme of things. Is that a cemented thing at any point?
I don't think so. I mean, even guys like Shieldsy are adding new things.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of lowered his release point, and that's kind of, I mean, I think it's pretty nasty. But no, I don't know if it's ever a true cemented thing. I mean, no one's ever perfect. You know, you're always working to get better at your craft. You know, right now I'm very comfortable with, you know, the mix of pitches I have. You know, I throw my change up a lot. You know, I'm starting to throw more fastballs up in the zone to complement trying to drive the ball down, and then the slider and curveball as well. You know, two different breaking pitches. So right now, I mean, I think that's good for me. And, you know, I'm still trying to get good feels for all of those and get more consistent with all of them.
How do you like to use data?
I don't use it too much.
Okay.
But one thing in particular that data has helped me with is I'm not like too keen on all the words for it, but just kind of like the what is it, like with the fastball, like drive, ride, or
it's like spin rate.
Not necessarily spin rate, but just it's like a combination. It's like extension, downward plane, all that stuff.
Okay.
And that's kind of helped me to learn about throwing the fastball up and how effective it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, looking at some data things with that, and the kind of like complementing it with just experience being out there.
Yeah.
You know, I might be trying to throw a fastball to a no count, for example. I'll be trying to throw a fastball down the way to a lefty, but I accidentally throw it up over the middle of the plate, but it's up at the top of the zone. He swings and misses.
Yeah.
In a hitter's count 2-0. It's like, you know, I just threw a fastball up in the zone 2-0, and he swung and missed. And then, you know, to look at certain data about, like, what my fastball's doing, you know, it kind of plays together. And so I've kind of put that all into one thing that shows me, oh, when I throw my fastball up in the zone, it can be very effective. You know, I don't want to live up there.
Sure.
You know, you want to kind of like be back and forth. But, you know, that's just one thing. Other than that, I don't worry about data too much. I do like to watch a lot of video and learn from that. But, yeah, no, I'm mostly on the old school side, I guess.
What do you, what does a Lucas Giolito do to unplug? If you're not playing baseball, mm-hmm. if you've got, you know, you only work once every 5 days.
Yeah.
Granted, it's brutal work, and about 9 people in the world can do it. What do you do to unplug?
I play a lot of video games.
Name them. Let's hear them.
The number one for me is Rocket League. I play computer.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I play computer games, so.
So primarily you're a PC guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I have my gaming laptop with me here on the road.
Sure.
And I have my desktop back home.
And did you build your own rig? Is that something
mm-hmm.
I... Yeah, okay.
I built two. I built one a couple years ago, and then I gave that one to my brother, and I built one last offseason. It's kind of, you know, top of the line. The 1080 GPU in it and all that good stuff. But, yeah, I play a lot of Rocket League. It's such a competitive game.
Sure.
That it kind of gets, you know, as a competitive guy, you know, you can always get better at it. There's no, like, ceiling you hit ever in Rocket League. I like to play some first-person shooters, third-person shooters. I played a lot of H1Z1.
And keep the hand-eye up.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's important.
I played a lot of H1Z1. Now I've kind of transitioned to playing PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Play a good amount of that.
I hear really good things about that. I haven't gotten into it myself yet.
Yeah, very, very fun. You
okay.
know, it can be slow paced sometimes. It's cool. It's kind of like, you know, you land on an island, every man for themselves, unless you're playing on teams of two or four, I think they offer. You can play first person or third person. Yeah, you land on an island. It's kind of like Hunger Games style, where it's like the play area becomes smaller and smaller over time, and it's like last team standing.
Oh, so it's like
or last
it's forcing
man.
You together to stop from, you know, like sniping or camping or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
area
yeah,
squeeze
yeah.
You.
Yeah, and
sure.
So that game's super addicting. I play that all the time with my buddies online.
Well, that's
yeah.
not a bad way to wind down, man.
Yeah,
it's not a bad
yeah.
way.
A lot of video games, a lot of, you know, TV shows, movies, just like to relax. And then this off season, probably try and mix a little more golf in.
What is the winter plan as far as baseball goes? Will you shut it down completely for a little while and then ramp back up? Will this offseason's plan be any different from last, since, you know, your innings will be at a level you've probably not hit?
Yeah, this is the most innings I've thrown, I think, already.
Yeah.
Well, I feel really good. My body feels great. My arm feels great. I'm excited to continue to pitch the rest of the season. After the season, yeah, shut it down. You know, I'll probably take like a week or like maybe two weeks off, and then start getting back in the weight room, running, all that good stuff, and then probably pick a ball up again December-ish to start playing catch and getting ready for spring training.
Lucas, appreciate it. Enjoy
yep.
Destiny 2.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
That is Lucas Giolito. The man builds computers and throws Snapdragon curves. It's a pretty unique set of skills, but Lucas has it, and it's been a lot of fun to watch him throw here at Guaranteed Rate Field. I don't imagine you'd want to watch him build a computer, but you could, because he can. He'll make his next start in a couple of days. Got squeezed a little bit in his last one last night for Lucas. 5 1/3, 5 runs, 4 earned, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts, and a home run. We'll hear from another starter in this White Sox organization in just a couple of minutes. Michael Kopech is going to join us on the show. He hung out a little bit when he was here at Guaranteed Right Field, checking out the work site. We'll also hear from Kevin Smith, if we've got time to squeeze that in after a quick break. I talked with Kevin, White Sox catcher, about catching both of the young men in the rotation, joining for their rookie seasons, Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez. We talked a bit about the two of them, how they compare, how they're different from one another. It's a good conversation as well. We got all that coming up, so stay right here. This is WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. The MLB.com at Bat app is your number one mobile app for live White Sox baseball. Stay connected with a fully customizable experience. Get White Sox home screen icons and app features, as well as game day, live game video highlights, radio broadcasts, StatCast news, and more. Download MLB.com at Bat today. I actually just had my dad download the app last night. He was using some other app. It wasn't very good. And he didn't know that he could listen to the radio broadcast right there on the MLB.com at Bat app. And so I downloaded it for him, you know, showed him how to use it, the whole thing. I mean, it's not like he's technology averse. It's a very easy thing to do. But I'm glad we put him on the straight and narrow. I'm glad we put White Sox baseball right into his phone last night. I didn't realize that the old man was using something other than the at-bat app, and I'm very glad that we fixed things. He's very happy with it, very happy with being able to access all the baseball you can possibly handle right there on your phone or your tablet or whatnot. After the 4:30 news, that's coming up in just a couple of minutes, I talked with Kevin Smith, White Sox catcher, about Reynaldo Lopez and about Lucas Giolito, and really kind of focused on what these last few starts, what this last little bit of September is going to mean to the really the three of them. Kevin works very, very close, as most catchers do, but very closely with the guys in the rotation to make sure that, you know, it's a team effort out there. That, you know, there's a reason when pitchers and catchers talk, you'll often hear the "we" out there, right? We're trying to throw the fastball there. We're trying to get him out with a slide. It's a team kind of thing. So we'll hear from Kevin in just a bit. We will also hear from Michael Kopech before we get to the 5 o'clock hour, but I wanted to let you know that we're running a special event on September 20th at 1 p.m. September 20th, 1 p.m. That's a Wednesday. Mark your calendars. Tell your boss you're getting off of work if you win these tickets, because we're going to have the event called Hot Seat with Han. It's a sit-down. Rick and I are going to sit down. We'll talk quite a bit from 1 to 2 about the White Sox organization, about what this organization has done over the last 6 months or so, what's next. Think of it as, if you've ever been to Sox Fest, and if you haven't, you really should go, think of it as your own personal kind of forum right there like you have at Sox Fest with the general manager of the Chicago White Sox. You don't get to do this anywhere else. There's nobody else that offers this kind of thing. So for diehards, I hope this is a destination for you. We are going to give you a chance to win tickets right now to the Hot Seat with Han on Wednesday, September 20th at 1 p.m. All you have to do is text SOX, that's S-O-X, SOX, to 312-591-8900 for a chance to win two tickets to this exclusive event. You text, you get a chance to win. We'll let you know if you've got a pair of tickets for Wednesday, September 20th at 1 for the Hot Seat with Han event at WLS Studios. It's at the NBC Tower downtown. You get all the information. You win a couple of tickets. When we come back after the 4:30 news, we'll have a chat with White Sox catcher Kevin Smith. I'm Connor McKnight. Keep it right here on WLS AM 890.